Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, it's us.
It is us. You're about to hear a live episode that we recorded in Los Angeles at the Ruby.
Yeah, with the fabulous Danielle Perez, mm-hmm. about the movie Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, a movie I'd never seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, we're just going to plug a few things at the top of the show, if that's all right with you.
Sorry.
First and foremost, our next live show in LA
is a little different.
Mm-hmm. Because we are joining up with the Daily Zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. So we'll be with Jack and Miles.
And it's a themed show where all of us will be talking about the year 1999. Mm-hmm. So there's no shortage of garbage.
Lots of material.
Cinema.
Y2K, remember it?
Yeah, remember? Because 20th century was the century of women, right? They're treated really well that century.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check out that show. It's on March 9th, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
20 years later.
Yeah, at Dynasty Typewriter.
Mm-hmm. Tickets, go to BechdelCast.com, click on Live Appearances, and grab those tickets.
Cool. Got anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, I have a screenwriting class I'm teaching at the Ruby,
our
normal spot. Thank you so much. I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University, but I don't like to mention it, as you know. So that starts on March 10th. It's Sundays for 4 weeks.
Cool.
So if you want to learn about screenwriting, maybe you want to write a movie with a strong female protagonist,
mm-hmm.
you can learn how to do that at my class.
Or maybe you don't, and then Caitlin can discipline you at her class.
That's true.
Yeah.
To sign up for that,
mm-hmm.
you can go to my website, CaitlinDurante.com, click on shows, and the registration link will be there.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want to plug, Jamie?
I'm going to be doing a weekend of stand-up comedy, ever heard of it, in Indiana, ever heard of it.
Oh, wow.
In smack in the middle of March, if you're in Indiana, love to see ya. We'll be in Indianapolis on the 15th at Black Circle Indie. And on March 16th, I'll be at the Tiger Room in Fort Wayne. The way you can get tickets is Google it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I love Googling.
Yeah, but hope to see you there.
Hope to see you there. So that's all we got to plug for right now. Enjoy the episode.
Yeah, enjoy.
The Bechdel cast.
Hi, what's up?
Welcome to the show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Bechdel cast. Yeah. Well, welcome to the Bechdel cast. As you know, I guess we'll do our live survey. So clap it up if you have heard the show before, the Bechdel cast, the one. All right. Oh, I see some wide eyes. Okay, clap if you have not heard the show before. Oh, okay, I did see. Okay.
We got a couple, all right.
Okay, cool.
Thanks for coming with your friend.
We're not scary, promise. Well, welcome. If you've never heard the show before, I suppose we should just give you a quick primer.
Mm-hmm. We talk about the portrayal of women in movies and how generally it's very bad. And we use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point. We use it to initiate a larger conversation about representation. And if you're not familiar, for you know the people listening at home who are just tuning in to the Romy and Michelle episode as their first episode.
Spoilers.
Whoops.
No, you have to click on it so you know what they
And for those of you in the audience who might not know, the Bechdel test is a media test that you generally apply to movies, and it requires that there are two named female identifying characters who speak to each other, and their conversation cannot be about a man.
Sounds like an easy metric, doesn't it? Well, guess what? Most people fuck it up because men make most of the movies.
Boo!
Boo! And they, I do think that, of course, the number one reason that movies don't pass the Bechdel test is good old fashioned misogyny. But I think that there is a level below that, just below that, where it's like men who are like, I could write a female character, but I don't know how to talk to girls. How would I know how girls talk to each other? Better make them guys.
Yeah.
Which is worse than misogyny.
I think cowards. That is a branch of misogyny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's the show. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for waiting. Hope that was worth it. I'm wearing my Crocs today.
You look great.
Listen, I was fishing for a compliment, but I wanted to give some quick background on my Crocs before we bring our guest up.
Okay.
I went on a very cursed brief vacation with my mom in Florida in our cursed timeshare, where my family has been paying like $6 a month for 900 years on a timeshare that allows us to go to Florida in the winter once every 3 years for 5 days. And we went, and my mom and I did not do anything except go to the Crocs outlet. And my mom made deep spiritual bonds with each and every one of the employees. And
very
so these,
nice.
Thank you. Now, this has just turned into a brag of how emotionally available my mom is. But we both got matching Crocs. And sometimes we talk about, like, oh, are you wearing the Crocs today? And today she was wearing the Crocs, so I'm wearing the Crocs.
Aww. Isn't that
women,
nice?
Wow. I love it.
I don't have any such mom story, so...
I'll text your mom and be like, can I mail you some Crocs? To really improve the relationship that's already good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to our mothers, all of our mothers.
Wow.
Or, you know,
or
parental
fuck your
figures.
If they suck.
Yeah. All right, we're off to a great start with the show. Everyone loves us. We're doing really well.
We had to thaw our cold audience and we didn't do it.
Shall we bring out our guest?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Returning guest.
You remember her from our Hocus Pocus episode. Ever heard of it?
Yes.
She's a hilarious comedian. Please welcome Danielle Perez. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Of course. This is exciting.
Yeah, we're so excited for you to be here.
I'm sad that I don't have Crocs. That's when I feel like this is such a leisurely look. It's like velvet, but make it house with the Crocs.
That's honestly why I felt the need to address it. It's like the disparity between the velvet and the Crocs is so vast that...
I love it.
The movie we're discussing today is, and I keep wanting to say for some reason, Romy and Michelle's Summer Vacation. That's not what it's called.
Correct.
It's called Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, which is the same number of syllables almost.
There should be a Summer Vacation Romy and Michelle movie.
That would
like
be
a sequel.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It seems like it should be a franchise.
Well, there was a sequel, but we don't need to talk about that. Catherine Heigl
was
in it.
It was a series or a movie?
It's not a movie.
It was a movie?
It was a movie.
It like flew so far under my radar.
Catherine. This was, I mean, the movie came out in 97, so I think this was like 2000s Catherine Heigl. Like this is like before Grey's.
Oh, okay.
It was like a made-for-TV movie.
Oh, that's why I don't know about
Weird.
It.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. Caitlin's like, I don't believe you.
Weird flex.
I grew up without cable, so I've never seen a single television show in my entire life. Oh. I am to TV, Jamie, what you are to movies.
Oh, so. That is true.
Yeah.
I know all bad television.
Okay, so we're talking about Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Yes. Clap if you heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clap if you've never seen it. Wow. Hell yeah, right?
With the same people who have never heard...
No prizes, no out.
Still have... The same people who have not heard our show before also have not seen the movies.
So how did you get here?
We're so sorry.
Who took you hostage? Blink if you're okay.
There's always one stray at every live show, and I simply love it.
That's wonderful.
Danielle, what is your history with the movie?
My history with the movie, I'm obsessed with the movie. I love the movie. I saw it when it first came out in 1997 in the theaters with my mom and her best friend and her best friend's daughter, who was kind of like my de facto best friend. but it was like, yeah, I was like 12 when I saw this movie, and I was so in love with it.
That's like, that sounds like the perfect circumstances to see this movie.
It was great.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't, like, I never watched Friends. I don't care about. Mm-hmm.
That was the one show I have seen. I've seen Friends.
Of course you have, Caitlin.
What?
Caitlin would watch Friends on Netflix.
excuse me. I probably would.
I did the worst thing with Friends, which is that I never watched it, but I was like 11 or 12 when it ended, and I taped the last episode and watched it over and over as if I was very attached to it. Because I was conditioning myself to be an absolute fraud.
Sure.
From a very young age.
Beautiful. Yeah. So, Danielle, this is one of your favorite movies.
It's absolutely one of my favorite. I love it so much.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Caitlin, what about you?
I saw it a few times in high school, I think. Or maybe I was like in junior high. I don't know. I saw it like shortly after it came out. Not quite right away, but somewhere in the early 2000s. And I remember liking it a lot at the time, but I didn't like really revisit it after that, which is a mistake because it's a fun, silly movie that I really enjoy. The dance scene with Alan Cumming at the end. Oh, my
incredible.
God.
I learned that dance. I made my sister and my mom's best friend's daughter, who was like my de facto best friend, I made her learn the dance. It's so rude. I keep saying that about her.
It's such a thing, though.
Because she's not like at the time. But not anymore. And it wasn't like we're ex-best friends, but it was like circumstance.
Sure.
We were 12.
Yeah.
My de facto best friend and I ended up gaslighting ourselves into being like, no, we're friends. And we're friends to this day, aww, man.
I saw this movie this morning.
Yeah. Wait, so you've never seen this movie?
I've never. No. And it seems like it on every level seems like a movie I would really love. And one of the few entries in Alan Cumming's, you know, like entire body of work that I haven't seen because I am an Alan Cumming stan.
Girl, and you've
king.
Never seen this?
Yes, I've never seen this. And so this movie really delivered to me on a lot of levels.
It's
Alan
so
Cumming
good.
Is like in this movie. He's in it.
I watched it earlier today because I haven't seen it in years, but I realized I'm like, oh, I feel like so much of my humor and like my love of like weird art theater people, you know, like Janine Garofalo, like it's so 90s, but it was like, I was aware of those things. Like it made me feel grown up.
Yeah.
And I feel like I learned a lot of stuff just like stuck in my brain that didn't come out till later from this movie.
This is an iconic movie.
For all of its faults that we'll spend the next rest of the show unpacking.
Wow, she's got a list.
It is, like, I'll say right at the top, a relief and weirdly progressive to see female protagonists in a movie who are absolutely mediocre. Because there's such a Mary Sue, like, if a woman's in a movie and she's the main person in the movie, she must be perfect in every way. She
right.
must be unkillable. She must have a specific set of skills, but not be Liam Neeson. And, like, she has to be perfect. And so to see, like, two female, like, kind of, like, idiots be, and I don't know, I was like, that's cool. You don't see that a
inspiring,
lot.
Inspiring, yeah.
Where almost every comedy is led by a mediocre man. Like,
I just appreciate mediocre female representation.
Well, that's what equality is.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is. Give me mediocre everything. It's 2019, for crying out loud.
Shall I do the recap?
Yes.
Caitlin's okay. Recap.
Well, first of all, the opening scene, we've got Romy, we've got Michelle. They are in their beds that are side by side. They are making fun of a movie. So it's like, they're us.
Pretty well.
They're Jamie and I.
Like, it's pretty well. Except Kayla and I are usually in the same bed.
Michelle has a cat. There's a cat present. Mm-hmm. It's us. Michelle used to have a back brace.
But I know, oh my God, we'll get to the back brace representative. I didn't know she had a back brace in this movie, and I thought that it was only Deanie who had ever had a back brace, that horrendous Judy Blume book that makes me sick to think about.
Hi, back brace girl.
Oh, back braces make you cool, is the thing.
But yeah, they're basically recording a Matreon episode, except minus the recording part of
they're
it.
They're watching Pretty Woman.
They are saying some pretty regressive things about
it's kind of their thing.
The people in the movie. But yeah, so they're basically us.
That's
is what
not
I'm
true.
Saying.
She gets really happy when they finally let her shop.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, shows a lot of empathy.
But before that, she's like, yeah, those shop girls are whores too. And it's like, yikes.
35th watch. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Anyway, so they're best friends, Romy and Michelle.
They've lived together for 10 years.
They live in Venice Beach, California.
That's
and
right.
yet only one of them is part-time employed. Supporting both of them. Very the
exposed
finances.
Brick.
Right. A huge apartment.
I know this was the 90s and Venice Beach isn't what it is right now, but
but the finances of this movie are baffling.
Right. So one day when Romy is at work, she runs into Heather Mooney. That's Janine Garofalo's character.
Who is just this week softly canceled.
Yeah, she was defending Louis C.K. pretty vehemently. And
literally,
it was
quote,
upsetting.
Leave Louis C.K. alone, unquote, which is a wild stance to take at this point in time.
Yes.
But, you know, maybe by the time that, who knows, a soft cancel.
Right. At the time of this recording, she's made some missteps, but who knows, maybe she'll redeem herself. Anyway, so probably not. I don't know.
2019, anything can happen.
Yeah, true.
All your faves are on notice.
Alfred Molina can be on the podcast. Anything can happen.
Well, the one uncancelable man. Thank God we will never need to call back to this clip because he'll never do anything wrong.
So she runs into Heather Mooney and they went to high school together. And Heather's all like, oh, you going to the high school reunion? And she's like, what? We didn't get an invitation, which does not get explored any further than that.
Well, so much of this movie would not happen if there were any semblance of social media. So we sort of just have to, like, if there were Facebook, everyone would know what the people are doing. And there's almost no need to go to a high school reunion. And I feel like that's probably why a lot of people don't, because they're like, oh, these people are doing better than me. Let me remove myself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the high school reunion's like built up to be this really huge thing that I don't know if it is
anymore. I didn't go to my 10-year reunion.
Yeah, I mean, it was like Romy having that cell phone was like such a big move.
And
showing
such a big
up with
phone.
with a flip phone.
So, and then Heather wants to know if Michelle married Sandy Frank. That's Alan Cummings'
the Frankazoid?
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Oh my God.
I could not get through this movie without saying every line.
Yeah. I love annoying my friends with that very habit. Yes.
I wanted to just take a survey of the room to see, do the teenage age people look older in this movie or Wet Hot American Summer? It was neck and neck for 35-year-old people playing 16-year-olds. Alan Cumming being like, no, I'm 16. When Alan Cumming, and he's a terrific actor, but you can see the fear in his eyes as he tries to play a teenager. He is soft 40 in this movie.
But then you've got Justin Theroux, who I forgot was in this movie, looking
ageless.
Like a major punk. Oh my God.
To be fair, mostly concealed by a hat.
True.
Okay, anyway, so Heather is all like, oh no, did Michelle marry Sandy Frank? Because she had a whole thing for him. And then we cut
have
to.
A thing.
Sorry.
I was very much in love.
Very much in love. It was not a thing. Then we cut to Romy and Michelle going through their high school yearbook, which triggers this whole like flashback sequence when they're like, oh, which group were we a part of? Were we A, B, or C group? And then they're like, wait a minute, we weren't part of any group. And then...
which sounds kind of incel, but in their case is cool.
I was like, we're loners. Yeah. Look at us alone. They like, there's a picture of like a group and then they're just like
in the background.
In the background.
We see Sandy Frank being in love with Michelle. We see...
who is a back brace high school girl.
Yes.
Important detail. Mm-hmm.
We also must mention the perm.
The perm.
Yes, the perm.
Yeah.
The perm is vital.
It's a huge plot point.
They're like, how do we age these characters down? What can we do?
And then we see Romy being in love with this guy named Billy Christensen. He's like the popular jock kid at school. There's like these mean popular girls, and the leader of those is Christy.
Classic.
She's putting magnets on the back brace. It's a whole
they
thing.
Have a special bag for it, which they're like, honestly, I kind of love. I know this is a very anti-bullying time right now, but if you're gonna do it, go hard. Be prepared. I enjoy the use of props.
That spoke to me of like, maybe Christy is in fact the loser if she's doing homework to bully someone. Good bullying is off the cuff, improvised.
Okay, so then so they're going through their yearbook. We see them at prom. Billy and Christy play a mean trick on Romy where she's like, dance with me. And he's like, okay. And then they leave. They leave Romy behind.
We also have to suspend our disbelief for the entire high school sequence that like Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino are not hot.
Like, oh, yeah. They're like, ooh, annoying. Madonna twins. It's like, yeah, wouldn't they be the dopest girls in school in 1987?
Right.
Wearing mini dresses and like bustiers, like,
and then like Christy's always dressed like it's fucking Easter, and they're like, oh, the hottest girl in school. I was like, this doesn't make sense to me.
You know what I did appreciate is that her color was purple and not pink, and I was like, look at that. Ooh, that's true. Really, that I feel like that was breaking some mold
progressive
barriers.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
for like the head bitch, you know, not to choose pink.
But she's also dressed. She and all the popular girls are still dressed like it's Easter in 1997.
True.
But then the stepmom from the Parent Trap is there.
Meredith Blake.
Yes, in a power suit. And she's like, actually, Romy and Michelle are hot. And then the Easter women are like, no.
It's crazy. Oh, precisely what happens.
Yeah. I love when Meredith showed up.
Can we talk about how the last day of high school is prom?
Yeah.
What? It's like, we're not going to see anyone ever again. It's the last day.
Yeah, prom is usually like 2 or 3 weeks before the last day of school, right?
Sorry, no, it's like 2 or 3 months. It's in spring.
Wasn't prom like...
Wait, when did your school end?
Prom was like in April or May.
Yeah, I feel like it's April, May.
Prom was after my graduation.
What?
No, wait, maybe the week before.
What?
I don't know. I remember.
I'm just so confused. I feel like prom was a good 2 months before graduation.
Oh.
I don't know. But also, I'm 34 years old.
Brag. Wow.
Just FYI.
What I remember about my prom is that I don't remember when it was exactly, but I do know that someone's tampon fell out on the dance floor.
Someone getting loose.
And then someone procured it.
That's how you drop it on the dance floor, okay? That's how you drop it low.
Someone was doing some serious work at prom and misplaced their tampon on the dance floor. And then I forget, like, some dork had it. He said he had a DNA tester at his house.
No, he didn't.
And he could figure out whose tampon it was. What he did was steal a used tampon.
He sucked that tampon.
Ew. So that's something that haunts me.
Progressive. Okay, well, that was great.
I haven't thought about that in a long time. Who says they have a DNA tester at their house? What a wide swing.
Did he think he went to school in the 80s and like no one would question him on that?
Google search DNA tester.
Oh my God.
That person later invented Ancestry.com. Okay.
Yeah, he is now the CEO of 23andMe.
And when he goes to his high school reunion, he can be like, I invented DNA testing. I'm a billionaire with
honestly,
a helicopter.
He probably choked to death on a tampon 9 years ago. I have no idea. I have no idea what happened.
Death by
man.
Misadventure.
Let's not kink shame. All right. So
he stole the tampon.
Okay.
He wasn't gifted it.
Yeah. It's a different story if it was gifted to him.
All right, so we cut back to the present, and Romy and Michelle are like, yeah, we're going to go to this reunion. People will be so impressed with us because we live these like awesome lives in LA. But then they're like filling out their forms for the reunion, and they're like, wait a minute. We are not that impressive. Let's try to find jobs and boyfriends.
And great. There's one of my least favorite, like their eternal weight loss narrative.
Yeah,
they're like, in 2 weeks, we're going to lose weight, get boyfriends and get sick jobs. And then we're going to go to our high school reunion and shake our fists or whatever.
Mind you, they are already very thin and they're like, we need to lose weight.
Yeah, it's bad.
Well, it's really more Romy because Michelle's eating that bag of Doritos.
Sure.
And she's like, I hate to say it, but I do think we could lose a few pounds.
And she takes away a vintage bag of Cool Ranch.
Cool Ranch Doritos.
Sweet
sponsor.
Shout out Robert Evans to the Doritos sponsorship.
Oh, yeah. Behind the Bastards. Yeah. Woot, woot. Okay. So then they're like, yeah, what's the point of going to the reunion if we can't impress everyone? So they like try to like whip themselves into shape career-wise and like partner-wise and fitness-wise, but none of it works.
So but they wear like, a lot of great outfits doing it.
So many great outfits.
Oh yeah.
Romy's treadmill outfit really spoke to me on a lot of levels. I was like, where do I get it?
You got to make
Romy
it.
And Michelle.
Yeah. At their boutique. Which is probably on Rodeo Drive. I mean, let's go.
I remember when everything was like a math question. Like, it's like you got to get like X miles on a rowboat to get to town. And who wants to go to town with a guy who rides a rowboat? That was my internal narrative. Anytime a guy was lame in high school, it's like he probably drives a rowboat.
That's a good burn to this day.
It still works.
Yeah.
So then Romy and Michelle are like, well, wait a minute. What if we pretend to be successful and then we'll impress everyone? So they make themselves some business suits. They borrow a Jaguar from the dealership that Romy works at.
Jaguar? The car.
A car, not an animal.
No, okay. You said Jaguar weird.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh.
Some people say Jaguar?
Oh.
Yeah.
Some people say it like that.
Which thing did I say?
Jaguar.
Jaguar?
Jaguar.
What is it? Jaguar?
Jaguar.
Jaguar.
Okay.
I just need to say I know the difference between an animal and a car. I'm like, so wait a second. Are they on a horse?
That's a Mustang.
Okay, so Jaguar is wrong then?
I know Jaguar is right, but that's not to say Jaguar is wrong.
They get an expensive car and they go they drive to the reunion, but on the way they're like, oh, what are our jobs gonna be? And so they decide that they're gonna
Woman asks them.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're like, oh, wait, we forgot to be specific.
Because they really made a big deal about being businesswomen.
Right. So then they decide that they're going to say that they invented Post-its, but this leads them to fight because Romy's like, yeah, I invented Post-its, but Michelle, you like designed them. And Michelle's like, wait a minute, do you not think I'm smart enough?
They were yellow.
So then they start fighting about like what they think of each other. And then they're like, you're not cute. You're not cute. And then they decide that they're not going to be friends anymore. And that when they get to the reunion, they're going to part ways and go off and do their own thing.
Then something wild happens that I had to rewind to make sure actually comprise 15 full minutes of this movie.
Really?
The dream sequence?
It's amazing. But you didn't. When did you realize something was amiss?
I hope this isn't too late. But when Alan Cumming could fly.
That's exactly. Because I was watching it because I knew that it was a dream sequence. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but when does it really start to get weird? And then it was like, and the music starts to get kind of funky. It was like, whoosh.
Well, because someone is like over the sunroof, and I'm like, how could you be at that angle?
Toby.
And then Alan Cumming can fly. And you're like, huh.
See, true.
But it's so far into the sequence.
Yeah, it's
so
great.
Far.
It's really awesome. It's so good.
But here's the thing. True Alan Cumming fans know that he can actually fly, so that didn't register as weird for
me.
Was it the Christie ballroom with all the giant posters of Christie in it? Was it that?
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yes. Made to be like fruits and vegetables.
Oh, that was fun. Christie, I did notice that.
The carrots and bananas. Mm-hmm.
The Christie ballroom, I was like, oh, okay, now my
the cars waiting for them in
inside indoors.
Michelle being voted most changed for the better since high school when she hasn't stepped foot inside the reunion all night.
And is only wearing a bra and no shirt.
I mean, I feel like that is changed for the better.
True. The speech where she's like, I can't find my top, and everybody's like, woo!
It's great.
Anyway, so there is a 15-minute dream sequence where...
Without the dream sequence, I don't think this movie is feature length.
No. No way. Wild. It is a... Right there, 91 or 93 minutes.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would be like right a 70-minute movie.
Like The Master of Disguise.
Well, that's the thing with this movie, though.
Another but I love that about the 90s. I loved an 87-minute movie.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Yeah, it's great.
The thing about this movie, though, is that there's about 10 minutes of plot, and the rest is, like, dance sequences that have no bearing on the story. Oh. Like, there's almost nothing that happens in this movie, and yet it is terrific.
There's so much. There's a lot. Internal friendship.
Sure, but, like, plot-wise, I mean, not a ton happens.
But I feel
they
like...
go to the reunion.
But not that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, like...
They try, and they fail. And then realize friendship is the most important thing.
And then the helicopter.
Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is a place on earth.
That
soundtrack is incredible.
Such a good soundtrack.
It's really good. Oh, God. Okay. So then the dream sequence happens. Everything's weird. But they get a lot of it right. Like, they know that Sandy Frank is rich somehow. So then, for real, Michelle and Romy go into the reunion and they're like, hey, we invented Post-its. And everyone's like, no, you didn't. And then their secret is exposed because Heather comes and is like, no, some other guy. And then they feel dumb because everyone laughs at them. But then they're like, wait a minute, friendship is important. It's stupid that we're fighting.
And then they put their great outfits back
on. They're like, let's go out there and be ourselves.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then Sandy Frank shows up in his helicopter and he's like, the only thing I don't have in my life is you, Michelle. And then the dance.
And we're literally just like, yeah, sure. Very few actors could get a yeah, sure from me for that kind of bizarro, scary plot twist.
Yes.
But I'm like, well, it is coming out of Alan Cumming's mouth, so I guess we're rolling with it.
Mm-hmm. And then we cut back to them in L.A. They have opened up a fashion, like a clothing boutique.
Presumably, do they state explicitly that Sandy, like, venture-funded their
She's like, I feel like we can pay him back this week. And she's like, I think we're, like, two years away.
So, yes.
Sandy don't care. He's unhinged.
And that is the end of the movie.
But you forgot in the dream sequence... They each win the medal for, like, most change for the better. Mm-hmm. But then they each go off with their, like, respective love interests.
Right. And then we flash forward to 70 years later.
70 years. So they are 98 years old.
And then they still hate each other.
Michelle on her deathbed giving Romy the finger.
A beautiful moment in cinema.
I really like
it's so great.
Because once you find out you're in a dream sequence, they're like, okay, now we're just gonna turn it up to a 13.
Like, just ratchet up.
One of the weirder things about the dream sequence is in the dream sequence, Christy has a career, but in the real world, she doesn't, which was right. One of the only things that I was like, oh, 1997 was a strange time.
Uh-huh.
Where only in dreams could a woman have a career.
Hey, but the one who no longer hangs out with the A group,
Lisa Luter.
Lisa Luter, she is like an associate editor for Vogue.
Yeah.
Businesswoman, elegant cream suit.
Yeah.
It's good to see Meredith be able to play a hero.
True.
I know, just for saying, all in all, they're not bad. The
and
hero.
Then just a year later, she is in that scene in The Parent Trap where they're out in the woods with Dennis Quaid and a lizard crawls into her mouth.
Yes.
What a wild couple years.
Wait, is this
her.
A Lindsay Lohan one?
Yeah, yeah. She plays Dennis
the
Quaid's
stepmother.
New wife.
Huh.
Who's like, I learned what Evian was from her.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So where should we jump in with our discussion?
Oh gosh, where to begin? What if we were just like, female friendship, yes, queen, and then left?
That's it.
That's all.
I mean, I do love that, like, female friend, like, this movie just celebrates female friendship. Like, sure. That's it. Like, you're saying, like, there isn't really a lot of plot, and you just get to see two women who are adults, like, genuinely care about each other. And I think that's honestly, like, very refreshing. Like, you just don't really get to see that in movies or TV.
And it's like they have this atypical lifestyle where they, I mean, it's like implied like by their like Lucy Ricky setup in their bedroom that it's like they're like in it, you know, like they need permission to fuck from the other person. and like they're, I don't know, like they have like their lives are built around their friendship. And then prior to this reunion coming up, they don't seem to be unhappy with that. Like they have fun going out together. Even when they go out to like, it's like they're sort of like, we're here to meet guys, but they still seem to want to hang out with each other anyways.
Yeah, like the two Cokes with extra cherries, and it's like the bartender knows that's their order.
Uh-huh.
It's like okay, wait, they're party girls, but they're like not.
They're sober.
They're not getting wasted. They're not doing anything crazy.
They just love hanging out. Like that part of it, I just thought was like awesome. And then it's like the problem comes from their whatever the world they come from isn't wouldn't think that's a cool way to live. And to be fair, they should have like Michelle should have tried to get a job at some point. But you in this world, you could get a 5-room apartment in Venice for, you know, like a part-time Jaguar cashier salary. Mm-hmm. What? I don't know. I'm like Michelle has rich parents we don't know about is the only thing I can think of.
Well,
to explain this lifestyle.
I mean, maybe Michelle was on unemployment.
Maybe. But then she goes out for jobs and she's like very picky
and unemployable because she keeps like messing up during the interview.
Well, she was good in Versace.
She was
good in Versace.
She was like, you look like shit in that shirt. I was lying when I said you looked
really
good
at telling people they look good in things. I feel like it's just, I love watching Lisa Kudrow be Lisa Kudrow. Yes. Like,
so good.
She's terrific.
It's so good.
And this is like mid Friends where you can just tell that Lisa Kudrow's dying to not be on Friends for 2 seconds. And she's so good. I also forgot how much I love Mira Sorvino. She's so good in this movie.
I haven't seen Mira. I've only seen Mira Sorvino in like one other movie. That like, did you guys ever see Wise Girls with Mariah Carey?
No.
It's ridiculous.
We still have to do Glitter.
Oh,
that's sure. We have to. Come back. Will you come back for Glitter?
I will come back for Glitter. I'm obsessed with Glitter.
I really love Glitter.
Mariah Carey thinks 9/11 is the reason Glitter did not succeed.
Oh, Mariah.
9/11 is personally very difficult for her.
Oh my God, what an iconic scapegoat for Mariah Carey.
So yeah, I mean, Jesus. This movie is largely about female friendship.
Yes.
That is the crux of the movie. But then there's also parts where it's like, okay, well, a big part of these two main characters is that they feel their lives are inadequate because they don't have boyfriends. And then by the end, at least for Michelle, like she ends up with a guy, I think we can presume... I don't know.
Maybe he just,
I mean, he's in love with her and gives him a bunch of money to open up this shop. So either way, it's.
I'm kind of all for letting someone think that you're in love with them and taking their money.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I think that's a feminist message.
Is that? It feels like reparations to some degree. But
I think the not thinking their lives are good enough, like that's for sure coming from Romy. Because Michelle seems very like, okay, I'll go along with like your plan. Like, sure, why not? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Michelle's like fine either way. Like, she's still like, even after like their plan to make their lives better or whatever goes kaput, she's like, I still really want to go.
Yeah.
Well, because Michelle...
And like, she's the one that like kicks Romy's ass kind of like, hey, our lives are great and I always thought they were great. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have to do all of this.
True. Yes.
That scene. I like Michelle is like the loyalest loyal friend possible. And we can get into like the message that extends beyond that. But Michelle throughout the whole movie, whenever Romy is having an issue of like feeling inadequate, like Michelle goes above and beyond to alter her behavior to make Romy happy or be inclusive in moments that like, I don't know. I feel like if instead of... When Sandy's like, oh, Michelle, I just want to dance with you. Like, Michelle's like, include Romy.
Yeah.
Which to Sandy is a wild challenge. But he's Alan Cumming, so he knows what to do.
He just goes, sure.
He's like, I have the choreography ready. Thankfully, this choreography is for three. But, like, Michelle often, like, in comical ways will include Romy to keep her friend happy and feeling secure in a way that Romy, like, not that Romy loves Michelle any less, but it seems like Michelle is the friend in the relationship who goes above and beyond,
mm-hmm.
usually, which I love about her. And I'm also like, man, you don't have to do it every time.
You could dance with Sandy, but I don't even know if she wants to. That's the thing is, I think she, I'm just like, I hope that after the helicopter took off, Alan Cumming's like, so you're in love with me, right? And she's like, no. And
no, but thanks for the helicopter ride.
And he's like, do we see them kiss? Here's $1 million.
Do we see them kiss?
They do. She's like happy that he didn't bring his big notebook. So they probably bang.
Yeah. She feels his erection, I guess. Is that what she's implying?
Yeah.
Tight.
Yeah.
She feels Alan Cumming's big ol' bonar.
So, I don't know. For me, it didn't seem like a sure thing that they ended up together because it doesn't seem that like that kind of movie.
Yeah.
Right. Because the end is he's referenced in terms of like him investing in their business, but we don't see him on screen again. Mm-hmm. So,
no.
The emphasis is still on their friendship between Romy and Michelle. Yeah. So
they're going to be terrible business owners. Like that's how you know at the end.
Yeah, they're going to sink their store into the ground.
But their clothes are so cute.
They're so cute.
The outfits are so good.
It was. It almost looked like Dash or something. It looked like that sort of venture.
It is perfect.
Yeah.
I would say the other kind of bigger issue that I have with this otherwise perfect movie is that several of the plot points revolve around many different pairs or groups of women not getting along with each other. So it's yet another movie, I would argue at least, where we see women just in conflict for reasons that aren't clear, just because it's like, oh, well, you know, they were like bratty high school bullies. So
I think at the time this movie came out, if we were to put it in context of the time it came out, and I do agree with what you're saying, this seems to be like the given for like, well, in movies, this is what high schools are like. There's nice girls and there are mean girls. And that what I was almost bummed out, and sort of started talking about it before, but like between the dream sequence and the real sequence, where in high school, Christy was this mean girl. And like that is an exaggerated version of dynamics that sometimes exist in real high schools.
Sure.
And yes, media should be challenging those and you know, giving young people different ideas of how high school dynamics can work. But it is a reflection of something that does happen in high schools, heightened to a major extent. But during the dream sequence, I forget which of them goes up to Christy, and Christy's like, oh yeah, I'm the most successful weather girl in Tucson, which felt more like the reality of Christy felt to me like less realistic and more reductive in terms of the story than the dream version of Christy, because in the real version of Christy, she is like the popular girl who is always like, I'm going to be famous, I'm going to do all this stuff. And then she ends up marrying her high school sweetheart and having three kids by 28. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the movie tells you there's something wrong with that.
The movie has a really weird view about motherhood, where it's suggesting
it's actually quite nasty.
Yeah. It kind of suggests.
I'm sorry. At least Romy and Michelle didn't get fat, you know?
But according to the movie, Romy used to be chubby.
And I was like, what?
Huh? And then people keep calling her that. And it's like, what are you talking about?
The high school dynamics in this movie are dated as fuck.
Yeah.
Like really, really dated. And don't do that much to challenge those dynamics. I'd say the furthest it went to challenge, because in high school everyone's focus is to like find a heterosexual partner and do well, and then 10 years later everyone's goal is to have a heterosexual partner and do well in their career. And so like nothing is really challenged there except by Romy and Michelle, who are like, we're losers, we're getting in a helicopter, see ya. And
I get that, there's like the mean girls and a lot of these just kind of reductive high school tropes, but I did appreciate it happens with when they're like talking to like Heather Mooney about like who they each thought they were in high school. Mm-hmm. And it's like, everyone made someone's life a living hell. Where like in hindsight, you can, like you experience it and you feel it this way. And so that's your truth. But then in actuality, it's like, oh, no, it seemed like you guys were having fun and you had it made. And I wish I was like as cool as you and doing all the stuff that you guys were doing. And I think that's like a very real, true thing.
Totally.
And then the Heather Mooney character is very pleased when she finds out that she has made the Toby Walters character's life a living hell. That
Cameron Monaghan's
character.
Great.
She's like, oh, hell yeah. If I was a horrible wretch to you. And that's great. just to go back to how the movie views like motherhood really quickly. It's this like weird idea. It suggests that like women who choose to be mothers have like given up and or that they also can't have careers. Like it's this weird.
I feel like it feels like leftover from second wave feminism kind of thing. Where it's like the focus is on women having careers, which is amazing, but it's almost like women can have careers, and if you choose not to have a career, fuck you. Like, it's not a very inclusive view.
Right.
It's progressive, and yet also it is mean to mothers that the world requires.
Because then, like, Christy even says a line that's something like, she's saying this about the Lisa Luter character, who's like the Vogue editor. She says something like, such a great outfit. She says, like, unlike a certain ball busting, dried up career woman we know, we're all happily married. And then, like, Lisa's like, yeah, keep telling yourself that. So it's
right.
It's like this that was not handled especially well.
It's very nice.
Well, those are the only three mothers we see. Like,
same amount of pregnant.
Yeah. They're all the same amount of pregnant. They're all the same amount of bitchy and rude and mean. That's it.
They're all dressed like it's Easter. It's crazy. Yeah, and then at the end, I didn't like the last beat for the Christy character where, like, her dress blows up and you see her pregnant stomach and everyone's like, ew, from their helicopter. Yeah. I'm like, this is a bit much.
Right.
Where the Christy character ends, and, like, the popular girl characters are dealt with very weird and not, like, not super thoughtfully. I feel like it's almost just like a cookie cutter idea of who a popular girl is, which I thought was challenged in the dream sequence, but then they were like, no, actually we didn't want to think about it. And at the end, in like the last 10 minutes of the movie, you get a very tragic setup for what's going on in Christy's life and her marriage to the point where I'm like, I don't think she put magnets on your back brace. I wouldn't people did that to me too, and I wouldn't wish this on them. Like, where her husband, popular Bobby, comes up, and it's implied that, like, he's not as, like, conventionally hot as he used to be. And he comes up to Romy, and he's like, my wife lied about my job. He got married to Christy. He's like, I do drywall for her old man.
He's also an alcoholic.
Just like, what does that mean? And but then he's like, yeah, and I cheat on her all the time. You know, he basically was like, Christy's life is a sham, and I don't care about her, and I want to cheat on her now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we still are supposed to laugh at her at the end. I felt so badly for her.
Well, it's supposed to be this like cathartic moment for Romy where she's like, oh, I get to do to Billy what he did to me by like leaving
me
at the
prom. Didn't feel worth it.
Well, yeah, I guess the thing is, it's like he was never like any sort of real fleshed out character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was supposed to be this objective hot guy in high school. And it was like, he just looks whack. Like, he's not even that hot. He's not like Alan Cumming in high school would bang, you know? 100%.
Yes. Also, God, and he's attentive.
Right?
Yes.
The Alan Cumming in the dream sequence when he has like plastic
the
surgical
new present to himself.
He looks
it's like, oh, Christopher Walken was your present face.
He looks, but like Michelle's like, oh, you picked a great face. You're so dreamy, but he is truly frightening looking.
He looks badly rendered.
So great. It's so wonderful.
It is a Polar Express character.
But like, what is the deal with Bobby being like the hottest guy in school?
I mean,
he's not that hot. He's super dumb. It's like, why does she even like him?
I mean, we all made horrible mistakes in high school. But the fact that Romy is still so hung up on him feels like a weird choice for that.
It also, it just like doesn't seem like the best. It's like, they're like, well, how much can we make go full circle in this movie? You know, where I think if this movie came out now, I think what the writers might do is instead of them laughing and pointing at Christy at the end, Romy would tell Christy, and then Christy would be like, I'm going to start anew and go to night school. And then she would also get on the helicopter and then all the women would be friends. And then Regina Hall would be there.
A crossover event.
It would be incredible.
See, it felt a little to me like the end of Jurassic Park when they all get on the helicopter away from the dinosaur island. Anyone else? No?
Okay. Is that how that movie ends? I forget.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then Sam Neill is like, look, pelicans, they're just like dinosaurs. Or that's what dinosaurs evolved into. Or I don't know. Great cinematic moment.
Did you know Sam Elliott got a star in the Walk of Fame this week?
Nope.
Who is Sam Elliott?
He's in A Star Is Born.
His one role.
It's his only, it's his debut. And they gave him a star. Anyways.
Oh, good for him.
He was snubbed anyways.
A star is a star.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app, Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another thing that I found to be not so great about this movie is one of the things that, like, temporarily breaks up their friendship is them being like, you're not cute. No, you're not cute. They're like arguing over how that each other looks.
So who's the Mary and who's the Rhoda? That's real. That's real. That's a real thing. We were arguing today about who's the Romy and who's the Michelle.
Let's just ask we've got a crowd. Okay, clap if you think that me, Caitlin, is Romy, and that Jamie is Michelle. Clap if that's what you think. Okay.
Oh, this might be tight.
Clap if you think the opposite, that I am Michelle and that Jamie is Romy.
Oh!
Well, there you have it.
Well, there you go.
I do identify as a Romy, so
I identified as a Michelle. I'm pleased with this outcome.
Okay.
I'm pleased with this outcome.
Wow, our fans know us so well.
Oh man, I do feel a lot of relief after that, honestly. Whew, all right.
To the one person who was wrong. No, I'm kidding.
I like that makes
hot chocolate.
Anyway, so yeah, that's a weird moment that I don't think, if this movie was like, came out today, I don't think they would be like, you're ugly. No, you're the ugly one. Like,
or I think it would be,
both very traditionally
cuter?
Attractive.
They don't say you're not cute. It's just who's cuter.
Yeah,
and I think it would be like, or it would be more thoughtfully addressed because I mean, I think that, I had a note about that too, but it's like the, I don't know, if we're operating on the idea that it's like the high school reunion and the ideas within the reunion that gets between them, that argument makes sense. But the fact that it only goes, I think if it was written now, it would be about their looks, their career. It would be about the three things they were worried about and not just like who's hot, who's not, like that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Like it would probably be a more thoughtful discussion of like, I mean, they barely well, talk. They only mentioned that Lisa Kudrow has never worked a day in her life once.
Well, they do. She used to have a job.
She used to have a job.
She was a sales person. That's
Romy carries her.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So then that explains a lot of Romy's like, hey, like, I don't know.
I'm the one who invented Post-its, okay?
Right. Because I pay the rent, which is fair.
But then Michelle's the one that always gets asked to dance first. Mm-hmm.
Again, very true of our relationship. Our friendship, Jamie.
You pay my rent?
Yes. And no one asks me to dance.
Thank you so much.
But I think that's like something that like does happen, can like happen in like real friendships where it's like you kind of, you get into these roles, you know what I mean? Someone's always maybe the leader more and someone goes along with like the ideas and...
Yeah, I feel like the relationship dynamic is, I mean, I found it to be very relatable. But the fact that like one of the main things that they argue about, to the extent that in their dream sequence, when they're 70 years older and still hate each other, the thing that they're still beefing over is, no, I'm the Mary. So I feel like I get it if like that is like maybe a sentiment that people have in a friendship that they're like maybe self-conscious or you know whatever but the fact that that's like I would say probably the main thing that the argument is focused on, where they do bring up like I carry you, like this and that, different things about their kind of professional lives and stuff like that, but the fact that that is the main thing,
it's very 97 the way it's presented. Definitely. And I think that that is like you can boil down most critiques of this movie to like, yikes, thrilled it's no longer 1997,
for example.
But I'm not grateful it's 2019 either. So what do we do?
One a few of the other, you know, 97 based issues that this movie has is
there's that queer phobic joke mm-hmm. made by Lisa Kudrow at the tippity top of the movie. It's essentially a no homo joke
when they're dancing at the club.
When they're dancing,
right? Romy says something like, I swear to God, sometimes I wish I was a lesbian. And Michelle says, well, do you want to try to have sex sometime just to see if we are? Romy says, yeah, right, Michelle. Just the thought of having sex with another woman creeps me out. Mm-hmm. And then there's a beat. And then she says, but if we're not married by the time we're 30, ask me again.
This is like 1997 all over.
Uh-huh.
Right. I mean, that's like essentially like the plot of like My Best Friend's Wedding, right? Like,
is it?
If I've we're not married by the time we're 30, let's marry each other.
That's a movie?
That's My Best Friend. You guys haven't done My Best Friend's Wedding?
No.
I am shocked.
It's crazy that I haven't seen that movie, and yet I've seen I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Girl,
that's
no.
Fucked up.
Wow.
Let's never do that movie.
Don't.
Let's find right now. I never want to see that movie again.
I would love to see if Paul passed? Blart Mall Cop passed the Bechdel cast.
Can we do Blart March on the Patreon?
Sure.
Okay. Both Blarts. Okay. If you're not on our Patreon, there's two, right? It's Back in Blart or something.
I don't even want to know how much money that movie fucking made.
Oh, Blart March. Look out.
I would also say that there's some, like, the way the movie handles race is also a very, again, 1997 way of doing that.
Is there anyone of
color? Is, I think there's
Jaguar
one.
Jaguar employees.
Yeah.
All the guys, Ramon.
Ramon.
Right.
I would do that. I would just yell that at my sister. Just yell out, "Oh, Romy, you are looking hot today." Just like, what is wrong? This is a dumb 12-year-old just an idiot.
Right. So the only The only person of color in the movie that has lines is this like creepo, like predatory guy who's constantly harassing Romy at work.
There's a few. Well, there's a few people of color who have lines, but they all work as mechanics at the Jaguar.
Oh, do we see them talk even?
Well, they're going like, ooh, ah, that's my boy. Oh yeah.
They're like, oh, he's really doing it.
They're like listening to like, it, okay,
there's
it's
a
not,
featured extra.
They're men. Are there men here? They're men here. What if you knew your coworker was banging someone at work? Would you excitedly creep up to the door to listen?
They all but have a tin can, like
right there.
That scene is like weird, but it's like there's an easy A vibe to that whole scene,
right? Which was fun, but then it's also like, okay, it's another example
the
of like
cigar, oh. Like no one's smoking one of a cigar at work
near oil.
When you work in the mechanic, like
you
just
have a lit cigar.
That scene is interesting because it's like she dresses up all, you know, sexy and she's like, I need a Jaguar is how I would say it. And so she's like kind of intending to flirt to like get her way into it. And then he's like, well, what's in it for me? And then she's like, I'm not gonna have sex with you. So like to some degree she's like using like a slight bit of her sexuality
she's
to get what she wants.
Taking advantage of his crush on her.
Right.
I'm for that.
That's the thing, is like it's the same thing as taking Alan Cumming's venture money. Like it depends on your personal code of what you want to do.
Sure. That means
I would take Alan Cumming's money. Just like,
but that
I
also
would.
Means it's like they need a man, the help of a man to get what they want. But then also it's like, well,
but it's set up in a very specific way. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I do see what you're saying. And then also the fact that like the only non-white people we see like work at the Jaguar dealership, or there's like one very brief part of the high school reunion where Lisa Kudrow's talking at a group of people of color, and the joke is that they are not allowed to respond. Like it is
right.
Like,
yeah.
They're like the Asian kids that went to school that don't have names.
Nope.
Don't have any backstory, and she just talks at them.
Right.
So they either...
Is it a joke that they don't understand what she's saying?
Is that that
is
they
that
just...
what it's supposed to be?
That doesn't make
that
any
doesn't
sense.
That doesn't make any sense because they went to high school.
Right.
Right.
In Tucson, Arizona.
That joke was weird and insensitive.
Yes.
I was reading back most of the stuff I saw in my research of like criticism done of this movie, which in 97 was largely uncritical. What a fun romp. And they're not wrong.
It has like a 76 Rotten Tomatoes though,
which
who's
is
hating
mm-hmm.
on it.
Yeah. Men. Probably Roger Ebert, that motherfucker. I read the movies. Roger Ebert had some deep-seated issues, but
yeah. He wrote Valley of the Dolls too.
He didn't understand anything that wasn't men. But anyways, a lot of what I read was written less than 2 years ago for the 20th anniversary of this movie. And reading some of the more modern criticism of it is interesting. And there was one piece specifically I read that was published in Bitch Magazine. Ever heard of it? In 2017. That was a point that I hadn't really thought of during my viewing of it, but the whole thesis of it was that this movie is built around the idea that like white women are allowed to be mediocre, and that is like a goofy, funny joke. Mm-hmm. But if you swap anyone else out, it becomes a joke that mainstream America probably couldn't have accepted in 1997, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
We'll link it. I really killed the room on that.
Well, I'm just pondering the yeah.
I mean,
message.
I mean,
well, isn't, I mean, the Harold and Kumar movies, I have only seen one.
Mm-hmm.
But like the one that we go to White Castle. But mm-hmm. is that, it's a stoner
it's
movie.
It's stoner, so it's a little different.
But it's like they're just regular dudes, right?
Do they have impressive jobs? I feel like...
I don't know.
I don't remember.
What if they were Fortune 500?
But also, like, what is an impressive job, you know? Like, let's redefine what that means.
I know. That's I great. Do think it's really refreshing that they are so unremarkable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that that's... I don't know. As someone who's, like, a girly girl who has vocal fry, says like a lot, all that shit, I really do love that they... are fully just ditzy girls that get by somehow and figure out how to survive.
It's funny.
It's refreshing. I don't know. I think I hate that like women have to be like exceptional to just be thought of as competent, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That infuriates me.
Yeah.
So it is, I think, nice to just see.
But that's one of the things real, I noticed.
Not that they're real people, but it's like not everyone's going to be like a straight A student and go to grad school.
Like me. And oh, is it a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University? Sorry.
Some women are just like, okay. That's right. Fine.
And they both accept each other and love each other.
Which is, I think, the greater and more important thing.
Right.
Is that there's genuine like friendship and support there.
Right. And it's the expectations of the world that bring in the conflict.
I would say, though, and this isn't really a criticism, but it was just something I noticed, that is that they are both, like, very stereotypically, like, hyper-feminine in their, you know, appearance and their behavior and their interests and stuff like that. Like, we don't know that much about them aside from they love fashion. They love, you know, wearing unique outfits. And
fun, frisky use of color.
It's so weird that they're just, I don't know, where everyone keeps, this movie gaslights you in a number of ways, whether you're like, Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino are ugly. And that their outfits make them look cheap.
Well, that they think that about them, or that they,
well, no, in high school, everyone's like they're like supposed to be these ugly ducklings, and they're hotter than everyone there.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
That is bizarre.
Yeah, and that their clothes are stupid when we all know that their clothes are great. It's confusing.
But then, like they think about themselves that they need to lose weight, and one of the things they're fixated on is like weight loss and stuff like that, which is like, again, for like 1997, a very stereotypical, I feel like,
the kickboxing thing. Class.
So, I, again, like, this isn't a criticism, but they're just like very hyper, hyper feminine.
Yeah. Who wrote the movie? How did this even happen? Truly.
It is written by Robin Schiff, based on a play that she also wrote.
Oh, wow.
Directed by a man, David Merkin. Is that right? Merkin? I'm sorry.
Feminist icon. Don't need to know anything else about him. His last name is Merkin.
Let me just make sure I didn't mistype this. I'm going to go on IMDb.
Is his name David Merkin?
It is, right?
It is.
What else has he directed?
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, do we have any other final thoughts about the film?
I don't know. I mean, I can't think of
Cameron Manheim.
Yeah.
Oh,
what a sweetheart. Go fuck yourself, Toby. That was really, I love that she was like, please don't tell me to go fuck myself. It really hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so real and vulnerable.
I know.
Like, she's like, clearly I've been to a lot of therapy, worked on herself, worked it out. She's done the work. She's setting boundaries, creating an expectation. I like it. I like it.
I would assume this movie paved the way for a lot of other, like, because this movie is like very well loved. It was loved when it came out, which never happens, especially in 1997, of like a female led major comedy movie like that. It broke a lot of barriers in many ways for all of its fault, and just a mediocre female friendship you don't see anywhere, even in an era where I feel like now we're getting more female representation than in past years, but there is still like that symptom of the Mary Sue of like the women who are allowed to be the leads in movies are superheroes, or they're
they have to be perfect.
You still can't be like a fucking idiot. Like, I just, true progress is female idiot representation. And this is it. And it's great and pure and like very, I don't know. I really like this movie.
I will say that it is yet another movie with a female lead, or in this case, two female leads, that ends in like a formal social event. Usually it's a wedding, a prom, a ball. This,
but
I would say,
title.
The high school reunion.
You don't like it, don't watch it.
But it ends in their store.
Okay, but a big component of this movie, I would argue, is the reunion.
Expand.
So, well, let me. It's different from those, like, the typical examples of it being like a wedding or a prom, which is what it usually is. But it's still, I feel like female-centered stories feel like they always have to end in some sort of like big formal social event, because that's what women like to do.
The only thing I would say there is that a reunion is less of a gendered seeming event.
Certainly.
Where everyone's whipping their dick out, real or figurative, putting it on the table at the reunion saying, this is what I've done.
Yeah, I think that if it ended, if it truly ended at the reunion and they go in the helicopter and that's it, like, I would be down with that. But it's like, but they have their store.
They become the successful businesswomen that they set out
to be.
To be. True.
I mean, for a pair of mediocre dum-dums, they sure do. They're girl bosses now.
They are girl bosses.
Girl bosses.
They
what
have
a troubling
big,
term.
Giant baby that curses and says shit a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Janine Garoppolo.
Uh-huh. Oh, Janine.
That character is so fun too.
That Heather character Mooney. Comes full circle.
The fact that they like help each other out instead of like continuing their sort of like antagonistic.
She has friends now.
Yeah. She raw dogs. Janine Raw Dogs the
cowboy.
Mm-hmm. So that's just always good news, you know. That's raw dogging in a field.
Yeah.
Oh, usually good news.
Usually. How optimistic are you, Jamie? That usually in a field.
Well, I guess there's no way to say without revealing too much of my personal history.
Should we take any questions or comments from the crowd?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We have time for
questions.
A few. Does anyone have any?
What did we miss?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Hi, I'm right here.
Hi.
What's your
Jamie.
Name?
Wow.
I know, yeah. Spelled differently, maybe.
Let's fight.
So as soon as we saw feminist icon Kat eating junk food on the couch, we got very excited for a potential Kat facts with Caitlin. So I was hoping I could request that.
Ooh. Set her up.
So it's Michelle. She's flipping through the magazine. She's like, I don't understand how models work or magazines. And then in the background, it's eating cake, the cat. It's like a piece of cake.
They're fine with it, too.
Yeah. Because
what's
alive.
Yeah.
It's not
a live woman.
Because what Romy and Michelle are eating are jelly beans and nothing else, it seems.
There's a lot of great product placement in that scene. Mm-hmm. There's a whole shot where you're just like, oof, we've just made $20,000.
But you're right. There is a cat in the background that is eating cake. And just in case anyone was curious, cats do have 8 nipples. This is Cat Facts with Caitlin. Although I recently learned that is not necessarily true. Sometimes cats...
Wow.
Sometimes cats have
a cat alternative fact.
Please represent cats with all numbers
facts.
Of nipples.
Sometimes cats have as few as 4 nipples or as many as 10, apparently.
Wow.
So I've been wrong the whole time. But an average of 8, I believe.
I'm shaken to my marrow.
I know.
Any other questions, comments? Well, okay, I guess
great.
We nailed it.
Yeah, we nailed
it.
Let's discuss whether or not the movie passes the Bechdel test.
Yes.
It does.
Yay!
In the very first scene, in the very first lines that are spoken, like Romy and Michelle, they're talking about Pretty Woman and how the saleswomen in that movie are whores. So it's maybe not the most progressive passing that we've seen.
But I also think that there's a sub-pass in that scene where the scene in Pretty Woman... is also passing the
Bechdel sure.
test.
Oh, yeah.
So perhaps as a new
do we do the saleswomen have actual names?
That's what I was going to ask.
I don't know. I've never seen
Mary Sue.
Wait, what?
When the man is like, when she goes to the shop where they do help her, he's like, Mary Beth, Mary Sue.
Help this woman.
Help this woman. But do they speak?
I would imagine
so. I think they do because they're having some sort of conflict in the store.
She's like,
in the
go
scene.
Get me this shirt. And then that's... and she's like, okay, that would be a pass.
I'm gonna hope and pray that it's our first double pass.
Double pass.
Yes.
And then several of the passes are also Janine Garofalo telling Toby to fuck off.
But a lot
they have
of them,
a fun dynamic.
A lot of the scenes do pass. A lot of the conversations do pass. And it's a hard yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
All right.
Nipple scale. Okay.
Well, has the nipple scale changed crowd. Now that tough we have crowd. This new cat fact?
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Yeah, anywhere between 4 and 10 nipples is the new scale.
Or we could stick with the old one, which is to rate the movie 0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal and representation of women. I'm going to go with a 3, I think, for this, because while it's a celebration of female friendship, always love stories like that. There is still a lot of like antagonism among different women in the story. And, you know, the way that the movie handles queerness and race is not well. And also there's that weird incest joke where she's like, yeah, you lost your virginity to your cousin.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, hey, okay.
I wouldn't brag about that.
Yeah, so it's like, again, like the very like 1997 based attempts at humor that are generally regressive, but the female friendship aspect of it and the fact that they, even though they're like feuding for a little while, Feud, a show that
Alfred Molina was snubbed for at the Golden Globes last year.
So they're feuding for part of the movie, but their friendship is pure and beautiful, and I love it. So 3 nipples, and I will give them all to the unnamed orange cat who eats cake.
I'll go 3 on this one as well. I agree with what you're saying, where there is definitely some dated dynamics between some of the female groups that I think wouldn't have been that hard to resolve or at least subvert a little bit. I feel like there's not really much subversion done with the high school dynamics, where
for sure.
It's one thing to present like popular girls, not popular girls, and then the way they interact with each other 10 years later could be telling or reflect something about how people grow over time. Mm-hmm. But this movie doesn't really go for that. And in fact, it ends on a joke making fun of a pregnant woman. So
yeah,
that's not great. You know, it's 1997, it's a very white movie. Sometimes I couldn't tell Mira Sorvino and Lisa Kudrow apart. but it is confusing. But mediocre female representation needs to take hold in culture. That's the marker of true progress, when non-exceptional women can be in charge of a movie and capture the hearts of millions without being punched down at all the time or made a mockery of. I think that's great. Also, back brace girls. And that's, you know,
mm-hmm.
If you've read Dini by Judy Blume, you'll know that seeing a back brace girl that's not Dini is critical. And Alan Cumming is handsome. So
the best.
He's so cute.
I include that in my representation of women's score. 3 nippies.
Great.
And I'll give 1 to Romy, 1 to Michelle, and 1 to Alan.
Ooh. Yeah. 5, because I'm a stan. Yeah, it's problematic. Everything's problematic.
Everything
it's 2019.
Yes.
It's a beautiful movie.
It is.
she does the which guy will I have sex with at the reunion. That's in a movie. Yeah. It's amazing.
That's beautiful.
Someone wrote it down, and then they spent money shooting it, lighting it, sounding it. I love that it's so girly, mm-hmm. and that they get to be so girly.
And unapologetically so. Like, very... Also, was anyone getting Thelma and Louise vibes when they're, like, driving through the desert in a convertible? They've got scarves on their heads. What an homage.
I love.
I was thinking recently, I was like, what if we try? We went on YouTube and we tried to do the Thelma and Louise challenge, which is you just drive off a cliff with your friend. And
what? That can't
tape
be
it on
real.
Your phone.
What?
No, it's I'm going to make it happen. That's how we're going to kill the Paul brothers. The Thelma and Louise challenge. It's a good idea. Tell it to anyone you hate.
I so hope that catches on.
All right, well, Danielle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Give it up for Danielle Perez.
Danielle.
Where can people follow you online? What would you like to plug?
Follow me online at Diva Deluxe, Noe at the end on Twitter and Instagram, and check out my show dates at thedanielleperez.com.
Hooray! Thanks to all of you for being here. Thanks to the Ruby for having us, and get home safe. Have a great night.
Thanks for coming.
Bye. Bye. Hey, real quick.
Yeah.
Something we didn't mention during the live show, but I think it is worth mentioning.
Definitely.
Is that Mira Sorvino, who plays Romy in mm-hmm. the movie, basically got blacklisted in Hollywood by Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
For a while.
Icon.
Our king, uh-huh. JK, fuck him straight to hell. Some of the reading that I had done mm-hmm. said that he sexually harassed her and then told Peter Jackson to not consider her for a role in Lord of the Rings.
Awful.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. But I would, you know, I hate Lord of the Rings.
I know
I
you do.
And I love Mira Sorvino. So for me, that works out.
But she did not deserve any of what she got. Also, yeah. She had worked with Woody Allen mm-hmm. in a movie that earned her an Oscar.
Yeah, right, shortly before
Romy and Michelle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she later apologized to Dylan Farrow for having previously praised his work and for kind of ignoring Dylan Farrow and the things that she had been saying about Woody Allen.
Yeah. Mira Sorvino tends to be on the right side of history.
Yes.
In every way. So we tip our hat to her. And that just is worth the mention.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
So thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. And speaking of thanks, we mm-hmm. wanted to say thanks to the Ruby for having us.
As always.
To all of their staff for all of their help. To everyone who came to the show to watch.
To Sammy.
To Sammy for recording for us. Mm-hmm. Friend of the cast.
Friend of the cast.
And and thanks to you listeners for doing just that, listening.
You can find us on social media in all the regular places,
mm-hmm.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, etc. at Bechdelcast.
Yarp.
You can join our Patreon, aka Matreon.
Well, how do you do that?
Well, you go to patreon.com/Bechdelcast and then you pledge a simple $5 a month, which then enables you to listen to two extra episodes a month, which is honestly a deal.
What a damn good special.
That's what we hear in the biz call, a deal.
Also, people sometimes ask us if they'll get access to the back catalog of our Matreon episodes if they join right now. And the answer is yes, 100%.
And there's tens of them at this point. Absolutely tens of them.
Indeed. So join that.
Just get over there.
If you want a good time.
Support the show.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing you could do to support the show is to rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listened to the podcast.
Yes, please.
And you can go to our merch store, tpublic.com/thebechdelcast, mm-hmm. and buy yourself a little feminist icon, non-binary icon, queer icon, feminist icon, Alfred Molina.
Amongst other cherished
many designs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as always, thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce.
Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.